Computing Lab at the University of Oxford. He's currently finishing his PhD with Bob Kuka, and he's been working about causal structure and quantum theory from a category theory perspective. That's what he's going to talk about.
Yeah, so I want to talk about a couple of related issues. The first part of my talk will be not particularly about categorical quantum mechanics, but will be a way that I think probabilistic theories and causal structure relate in an interesting way. But it will inform the second part of the talk, which is a way of talking about causal structure and categorical quantum mechanics. And the broad theme of what I want to say is that the formalism of categorical quantum mechanics uses certain types of categories which have a corresponding graphical calculus. And they can describe information flow in quantum systems in a very intuitive way. But it's not clear what causal information they contain, because, for example, many of the operations that you can do are just represented by the simple input-output boxes. And what I've done here, I've just bent round the inputs and the outputs, and that seems to be an acceptable operation in the formalism, but it seems to just suddenly switch round the causal order. So the broad questions I'm trying to address are, how should we add causal structure to this formalism? And secondly, does it mean anything for foundations of quantum theory and the way it might relate to special relativity? So, as I was saying, the first part, I'll just talk about an example of an interesting example of the probabilistic process, and then I'll cover some categorical quantum mechanics background and talk about some structures which I'm developing. So, this is a very simple setting. I want to consider bipartite systems with binary inputs, binary outputs. They're probabilistic, and these type of boxes seem to be studied quite a lot. For example, PR boxes as a way of understanding why quantum theory is not more non-local. So we just look at this abstract setting of stochastic matrices. And so you can represent a lot of different types of correlations like this. And what we imagine is that the agents involved are arbitrarily far apart, and so relativity imposes some kind of causal constraints on what can be done here. And in particular, the standard condition which we impose is no signaling condition. And what this means is that Alice signals to Bob if, by her varying her inputs, Bob can gain information about Alice's output. Sorry, about her input. So no signaling means this cannot happen from Alice to Bob, nor can it happen from Bob to Alice. So this condition is thought of as an axiomatic way of defining what relativity imposes on probabilistic data.
What do you mean the statistics of his input?
So I mean that from his, statistics of his input is not really relevant. He chooses a particular input, and he looks at his input-output pairs. And then if Alice signals to Bob, he can deduce what her input is. So he will have a prior distribution on his inputs.
He doesn't have to have a prior.
Well, the way I'm thinking of it, he will place a prior distribution on it.
Are you saying that the conditional probability of a given output for a given input, if it depends on the distant input, that would be signaling?
Right, yeah, exactly.
There's no distribution over outputs.
No.
Averaged over inputs.
But yeah, I'm thinking about
outputs for a given input.
Yeah, so no signaling will be conditional independence of her on her input.
I didn't hear. So does that mean you do or don't need to assume that there's
a prior
probability distribution on the input.
So I think what is often done is the prior distribution on the inputs is just ignored or just thought to be some kind of external free choice.
Why should there be any?
Well, I mean, why shouldn't there be prior probability distribution? I don't see why.
But then does it require, can you dispense with the assumption that there is one and still get all the results, or do you actually somehow need to assume it? Because, I don't particularly understand this distinction between free choice and not free choice, but if there really is free choice in the sense that people talk about it, then there wouldn't be a prior distribution on the inputs.
Well, you could imagine that the free choice is the choice of the distribution.
No, but each time you do an input, you could choose it freely.
So what I will show you will not depend on the prior.
Okay.
But the intermediate steps will require talking about the prior.
It depends on whether there is a prior. I mean, that's the prior.
I think it will become clearer why I'm talking about the prior here.
So it doesn't depend on which prior, but it does depend on using the prior.
Yeah, right. My later results. But I'm just setting it up with reference to the prior. So what I want to say is that, so the no signaling condition is by hypothesis, something that is imposed by the background causal structure. And so I want to consider the causal structure of a relativistic space-time in a bit more detail. In particular, I want to make the point that the causal structure of a space-time is time-symmetric in the following sense. I can think of the partial order generated by the causal curves on the points. And the direction of this partial order will be defined by the time orientation on this manifold. And I can define a notion of time reversal by just reversing the time orientation. And this will lead to just flipping the direction on the partial order. But the point is that whether two points are space-like separated will not change under this operation. It's, in a sense, not a very deep point, but it's the notion of time reversal which I think is appropriate for this setting. And the question of whether points are space-like separated, whether that is preserved under time reversal, is something I want to address here for these input-output boxes. So one initial concern might be these input-output boxes are thought to be choices of spin measurements. And well, that would be the input. And the outputs would be whether or not you get spin up or down. So that looks very time asymmetric. But one can just imagine that the way they are implemented is symmetric between the inputs and the outputs, in the sense that rather than choosing some particular spin direction, Alice and Bob just input a 1 or a 0 and into a box like this with a card, and when they get one, when they get the result, which is spin up or down, it's just translated into a 1 or a 0 being spit out of the machine. So in this way, the implementation is symmetric between inputs and outputs. But then the question is, how exactly should we define time reversal for these probabilistic devices? And this is where the prior probability distribution comes in. Because we know that these stochastic matrices are defining a correlation matrix of P of O given I. They're defining conditional probabilities. But in order to consider the time reverse situation, we should consider P of I given O. And to calculate that, that does indeed require knowing what the prior is. And so it might seem as though in order to make conclusions about whether the box is still know, signaling in the reverse direction that, I guess, as you were saying, I need to somehow pick a prior. And so the concern would be, firstly, perhaps this is imposing some kind of boundary condition at the beginning of the evolution of the box, or secondly, the prior is thought of as an external free choice of the experimenter. But what can be found, actually, are such input-output boxes which are signaling under Bayesian inversion for any prior. So that immediately addresses that concern of whether our notion of time reversal is dependent on which prior we use.
Even though they're non-signaling in the forward direction.
Even though they're non-signaling in the forward direction. And in fact, these examples are classical correlation matrices, meaning they can be thought of as a sum of local deterministic boxes. And so this is not the only example. Another example is the PR box. But as yet, we can't find quantum examples of this. And that's related to the fact that in order to find such examples, the correlation matrix should have full support. Should not have full support. Whereas when you look at non-local quantum correlations, for example, if you need to attain Cyrielson's bound, then you will not be using mutually unbiased bases. You'll be choosing some particular angle, and that will lead to the correlation matrix being saturated. Yeah.
So the examples you have, you said that this example is classical, so you can regard it as convex mixture of deterministic cases.
Yeah, right.
Is it true that some of those or all of those deterministic cases are signaling? So would these examples violate Bell's inequalities?
In the forward direction?
Let me ask two separate questions. In the forward direction, yeah, is it
they are not signaling.
These deterministic models that underlie these probabilistic models are signaling?
No.
So they're also local.
Yeah, they're local. Yeah.
Did you look at tripartite correlations?
Not yet. No.
Because a GHZ like pseudo telepathy game looks more analogous to a
PR box. Yeah, that's what we were thinking as well. And also, it has this property of not having full support the correlation matrix.
Do you have examples where it's not signaling in either direction?
Yeah, there are examples of that. Yeah,
they're easy to find.
I have examples of that. I mean, originally we didn't think it would be signaling in the backward direction. We were just studying the formal properties of this Bayesian inverse. But then we stumbled across this example.
But that depends on the choice of prior. Whether it's not signaling in the backward direction.
Well, this example doesn't. Oh, sorry. Whether the other examples are non-signaling. Now, there are examples which are non-signaling in the backward direction for all priors.
Okay.
And there are examples which are signaling for some priors, but not all.
When you say for any prior, does the prior have to have some support on both choices? Is
it just it has to have total support.
That's what total means.
Total,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe this is obvious, but I just wanted to say that it's useful to bear in mind this videotape metaphor. And if we videotape the forward distribution, we'll have O given I, and playing the tape backwards will exactly be the statistics of Bayesian inversion. And so it seems that if all we are given are sets of these statistics, then just by looking at the records of these correlations, we can tell which one was the correct direction, because this one will be the one which did not enable signaling between the two parties.
You have to do it over and over.
Right, yeah. in the statistical limit. So, this raises the question, where does this, how is this arrow related to other temporal arrows that we may think of? And so, in order to consider this question, in order to get backward signaling, firstly, we must use correlation matrices which are input dependent, meaning that, well, we mean an input independent one is one for which each column of the correlation matrix is the same, and that will not lead to backward signaling for any prior. And we have to use non-deterministic ones. So the fact that we have to use genuinely probabilistic input-output boxes perhaps suggests that there is something similar to some kind of thermodynamic arrow of time. So an initial observation is that these processes can either increase or decrease the Shannon entropy depending on which prior is used. Because if supposing they just decrease Shannon entropy, then we might think that they are in some sense irreversible computations, which would give some kind of hint of a thermodynamic arrow. But that's not the case. But in any case, to think of these processes as being physically implemented, we need to imagine that they are implemented in some kind of computer, and we would model the environment by a heat bath in order to study the thermodynamic properties of these boxes. And then to understand the relation to the total thermodynamic entropy of this now expanded closed system, we need to think of how Landau's principle comes into play here. And that will just relate Shannon entropy of this process to the thermodynamic entropy of the external system. And that's this relation, which says that if your Shannon entropy is decreasing, then you are going to have a bound on the thermodynamic entropy of your non-information bearing degrees of freedom of the apparatus itself and of the heat bath. So that will go up.
Why does this have a special name? Why is this just not the second law of thermodynamics?
Landau's principle.
Yeah.
Well, because this is relating the Shannon entropy to the thermodynamic entropy of the system, which most formulations of the second law wouldn't mention.
So this is the second law if you attribute. If you regard Shannon entropy as true entropy.
As what, sorry?
As real entropy.
Yes, but I mean, this is so it's called the principle, but I think most people would agree it's just a consequence of statistical mechanics. It's just showing how the Shannon entropy change of these boxes is just consistent with the fact that the thermodynamic entropy has to increase of the closed system. That's all I'm saying here. At this point, I'm just talking about consistency. But, I mean, the question might be asked, is this dependent on, is the arrow that I found with this signaling in one direction and the no signaling in the forward direction somehow logically related to the thermodynamic entropy having to increase in the forward direction? So, certainly, the second law does not imply backward signaling. The fact that the thermodynamic entropy of a closed system has to increase has nothing to do with. Yes?
So, can you explain again what is the arrow that you found?
The arrow that I found is that these binary input output boxes, certain of them, are no signaling in the forward direction, but signaling whatever choices, whatever prior we have on the input distribution in the backward direction.
Why is that an arrow? Why is that an arrow? So that you can compare to the arrow of the semi-dynamic error, for example?
Because it's, well, I mean, firstly, these signaling conditions are supposed to represent the causal structure of the background spacetime. That is not dependent on the time orientation. But it seems that the probabilistic data from these boxes is dependent on direction in terms of the signaling. Yeah. So again, I'm not making any complicated arguments here. I'm just saying that so in a system which is required to satisfy the second law, certainly it will not imply that any subsystems are going to have backward signaling because I have counterexamples. So as I mentioned, input-independent processes will not lead to any signaling in the reverse direction. But then on the other hand, it might be, the converse question might be asked, does backward signaling imply somehow that the thermodynamic entropy of this closed system must increase? And no, because O. Moroni has done work on defining what Landau's principle means for an entropy decreasing universe. So in other words, you set up your statistical mechanical system and you have a future boundary condition which is low entropy point. And you want to study what computations can occur in this universe and how the entropy change of those computations are related to, are they still consistent with the fact that you've imposed that the thermodynamic entropy of the entire system must decrease? And he's shown that, yes, this is still completely consistent. So the only difference is that in Landau's inequality, the inequality is swapped around. So my point is just that because these are such simple input-output boxes, there is no way of tying this arrow to any thermodynamic arrow, which is a question that some people have raised. It may well be obvious because they're so simple that you can you can devise all kinds of ways of completing the system and considering the implementation of these devices.
Some way of saying that this arrow has to be the same. I mean, can you imagine a universe in which you have a signaling box and a non-signaling? I mean, I suppose the same question, why is this an arrow for the whole of space-time? And if you have one box over here which tells you the arrow is going one way, and you have another box over here which is telling you the arrow is going the other way.
No, but all the boxes in the correct direction must, by hypothesis, be non-signaling. We're assuming, I mean, I'm taking that as a, I'm assuming that when I use these boxes in the actual direction of time, I'm not going to signal when I use it. I'm not going to signal to the other agent.
I have a related question. I mean, it's an interesting question, but I don't quite know how to think about it. In the real world, there would be no possible confusion because you can't confuse the output unless you can give another example. But in the kind of examples I'm thinking of, like Stern-Gerlach and all the usual ones, there's no possible confusion between the output and the input.
But that,
the output is something like a particle emerging in one beam, and the input is a particular orientation of this magnet, something like that. So those are obviously not time reversed of each other. I mean, if you time reverse that,
well,
you get a completely different thrust.
That depends. That's not. I mean, you could say that's quite a subjective way of detecting which is the correct direction. You're saying, oh, okay.
It's not subjective.
It looks like he's selecting a spin direction. I want to extract it just from the statistics alone.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not even sure that's true. Like, you could choose your settings by sending particles into the box in some way.
Yeah, maybe you could set it up
like
some way that
so
that
then it might look quite symmetric.
Well, maybe if I go back,
that would be nice to see. How...
But this is what I was arguing here. I was saying let's give our two agents box where they just put in these cards 0, 1. We're not told what's inside the box. It could be some complicated way of choosing the spin direction. And then when the spin direction is measured, you get up or down, then the agents are again they're not told that information. It just is spit out as one of these cards.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you can abstractly imagine something like that. Just say a sequence of zeros and ones, like you said. But if you really, I mean, if you really time reverse this experiment with the particle coming into a Stern-Gerlach, all you would see is the box would be set in a particular way, and then the particle would just go in the other direction. There wouldn't even be, if you see what I mean. Then at some later time, in the reverse time, someone would come and move the box around or something like that to another setting, or turn it off or something.
I mean, those just seem like contingent facts about the way that we set up experiments. I mean,
well, if they're contingent, then there should be other examples when they're not. It's not like
examples of the implementation, you mean, of these boxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I haven't fleshed that out. I haven't really thought about that. It seems clear to me that one could do that. So, anyway, this example, this issue of backward signaling seems to me to raise some interesting issues about the way to think about time reversal. So, I mean, it's obvious that time reversal is not an operational symmetry unlike other types of symmetry, spatial-temporal symmetry such as spatial displacement. It's not something that we can implement. We have to make these kind of arguments that I did already, which are somewhat either counterintuitive or perhaps convoluted. So what I want to say really is just that there are very subtle issues in thinking about probabilities and space-time, in particular the notion of intrinsic probabilities and space-time. So one could say that in order to be consistent with relativity, we need intrinsic probabilities. But from Bell's theorem, but what I was doing in the preceding work was thinking about these boxes as happening in a closed space-time. And a relativistic space-time doesn't really have any notion of probability associated with the events that occur. So you might say, well, actually, there's some kind of contradiction happening right at the beginning, conceptual mismatch there. Because really, when most people think about these boxes, they're not thinking about them in that block space-time way. And the problem is probably more pressing when you think about the fact that the inputs are supposed to be somehow interventions by the agents. This goes back to the free choice issue. And space-time is just a closed system. There doesn't really seem to be any room there for that kind of intervention. And so resolving this problem perhaps needs some more careful thought about that.
Why does the Bell theorem imply intrinsic probabilities?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I mean, I just thought I mean, the thing is, I'm interpreting it as saying that a local hidden variable, deterministic hidden variable theory, is not possible, and so perhaps we just have to interpret the quantum formalism as giving kind of free probabilities.
But where does the intrinsic epistemic distinction come in? I'm not quite seeing the connection between that and Bell.
Well, I mean, I'm just suggesting that perhaps it's Bell's theorem is saying that I cannot have epistemic probabilities, i.e. probabilities of a variable which are consistent with the underlying causal structure. In other words, they have to be non-local.
I don't see the connection with epistemic, but it's okay.
Okay, maybe I used the wrong word, epistemic. Another issue that might be raised here is that, so there's a lot of work on considering the why quantum correlations are not stronger than they are, why they don't exceed Sirotin's bound. But that work is motivated by thinking that the no signaling condition is an expression of the fact that background causal structure exists, the relativistic causal structure. But if, according to what I've just been talking about, the two notions of causality seem quite distinct, they don't share the same kind of symmetries, then perhaps that is not a particularly good question to ask. I think I mentioned the two points before, so I'll just skip this.
Modeling space-time articles order as it's done in quantum gravity. It's done in classical gravity, actually. You know, we model space-time articles.
Well, I mean,
and in fact, we do it even in Minkowski space-time, where there's no gravity. I mean, are you saying there's a you're saying that you couldn't, for example, have a theory of a relativistic Brownian particle? Is that somehow there's some problem with that?
What I'm really talking about is this, again, this notion of intervention of the agents. But the intrinsic probabilistic thing is probably not that relevant. It's really the notion of intervention which I'm more concerned about, because again, with a causal order, you're just assuming that there's no room for kind of choice of the agents. And that seems to me to be what is the problem here. And so I'm saying that if to incorporate that, a partial, just a fixed global partial order may not be the way to model it. Agents which have some kind of free choice in their inputs, but for which there is some kind of background causal structure. All of those stochastic processes.
Background causal structure and free agents.
So yeah. I mean, that's what this example seems to show, because we know that we're assuming the background causal structure is just some simple partial order. And yet, on the other hand, we have this no signaling condition, but that breaks the background causal structure when you look at the time-reversed picture.
Why not just say the background causal structure has a time direction of time?
I'm not sure if that's consistent with the way that we think of causal structure in relativity.
Well, it's certainly consistent. I mean, it's a very practical issue whether we have time reversal is not an exact symmetry of microscopic physics. It so happens that CPT is considered,
right,
as far as is known up till now, is consistent, but it could happen tomorrow that someone finds a counterexample. I don't think that would particularly discomfort anyone. I mean, a lot of people would be surprised, but I don't think it would make any conceptual revolution.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps, but it would be need to be something which would also accommodate this issue of the reverse. When you reverse that time direction, causal structure is different.
It's now different, yeah.
Yeah.
That's by definition.
Well, in the sense that...
Just like space-time...
The points are no longer space-like separate.
There's an orientation... I mean, the physics we have now, space-time overall, has an orientation. You can't reverse it. It could have a time... It has a global, you know, four-dimensional orientation. It could turn out that that's fundamentally not there. It's just spontaneous symmetry breaking. But as the series standard model stands now, it is there. it could just equally well turn out that there's a fundamental distinction between future and past direction. So I don't see that it would that run afoul of any basic assumptions that...
Well, I mean, whatever that structure is, when I look at the reverse time orientation, it would have to accommodate the fact that the two points where the agents involved are at are no longer space-like separated.
No, that's...
Because that's what this example seems to show.
But the claim is that the physics would not be valid. You just couldn't reverse it. You'd have been in a different world, a different kind of world.
You're saying you can't even define the time reversal?
Either you can't define it or it doesn't commute with Hamiltonian or however you want to say it.
Okay, well...
Either is possible. For example, in the standard model with massless neutrinos, you couldn't reverse right and left. There was no operator that actually did that, because they would take a left-handed neutrino into a right-handed neutrino. Now you can reverse it, but it's not a symmetry. But either way, it points to an inherent right-left distinction in space-time. So in the same way, I don't see why there couldn't be a future-past distinction.
Yeah, perhaps in that sense, yeah. But I mean, it's, at least in the naive setting I've been thinking of, when I was thinking just background space-time was just a simple cause of order on Minkowski space, that doesn't...
No, you mean a simple space-like relationship.
Yeah, space-like relationship.
Causal order is sort of by definition, as you pointed out. You want to say that you could reverse it without changing it.
Right, yeah.
But that... So it's just one possible way out of your...
It's one possible way, but it seems to me to be a lot more sophisticated than what I'm considering here, because I'm not really considering... I'm just trying to consider a simple kind of information theoretic perspective here. Because what I've talked about doesn't really refer to any particular violation of T-symmetry by microscopic particles. So now I'm going to talk about the formalism of categorical quantum mechanics. And after that, I'll talk about the definition of a structure, causal categories, which I think relates to the work I've just been talking about. So I'll just give some brief background on categories. So a category is just defined by, it has a set of objects and some morphisms between those objects, and we denote the morphisms as this Hom set C of A, B. And the main point about category theory is that we want to consider a composition law for the morphisms in the category. In other words, there's a closure operation. And so that's really the main point of category theory, is to consider the algebraic structure of this closure of morphisms. And so some simple examples, the category of sets and functions. So then the objects are the sets, and the morphisms are all functions between these sets. And then composition of these morphisms is just given by function composition. And another simple example is the category of groups and group homomorphisms. So if you compose group homomorphisms, you get another group homomorphism. And that's kind of a motivating example, because you just want to consider structure preserving maps between these objects. So the main point of defining such categories is just to organize some particular collection of mathematical objects. And so the approach of categorical quantum mechanics is to organize certain mathematical objects which represent physical processes. And in particular, it uses symmetric and ordered categories. And they have two notions of composition. So the first one is the composition of morphisms, which I just described, but also a monoidal product, which will become clearer when I describe some examples. So for example, in the category of vector spaces over some field, the usual composition will just be composition of linear maps, and the monoidal functor will be given by the tensor products of vector spaces. And each monoidal category has a unit, just like a monoid has a unit. And in this example, it will be the scalars, the real numbers. And one of the interesting aspects of using monoidal categories is that they carry this two-dimensional graphical calculus, which encode the two different types of composition. So the composition of morphisms is depicted by on the left by joining together the box representing the morphism G and the box representing the morphism F. And you can think of the monoidal product as being depicted by this kind of parallel composition, in which their independence, as just as we think of the tensor product of systems as being independent, is represented by a gap between the two morphisms. And scalars of a category are represented just by a closed box because they have no inputs or outputs. They're just numbers and they can just move around freely in all diagrams. And the two types of composition interact via this interchange law, and the usefulness of the graphical calculus is illustrated by the fact that this symbolic equation becomes just a tautologous graphical equation. And so the point is that by using the graphical calculus, you just subsume lots of things which symbolically will take sort of a lot of tedious manipulation.
Sorry, can you? Did you mean to reverse two things on the right-hand side?
They're the same, yeah. These two.
They're literally the same.
Yeah, they're literally the same. That's the point. Because the equation on the top is saying I take H tensor K and I compose it with F tensor G. And on the right, I do this first. I look at H tensor F and then I tensor it together with K composed of G. So the point is just, sorry?
But you could reverse the two on the right and that would still represent the same graph, is that right?
Reverse
them. I mean, just switch what's on the left. On the right-hand side, there are two vertical.
Yeah.
I don't know. Paths. You could take the H and F and draw it to the right of the K and the G, and that would still be the same thing. Is that right?
No. Well, it would be.
It's not. The same.
It's not the same, but it's isomorphic to it in the formalism. It's, in other words, it's okay to do that in spirit. But
it's what?
It's okay to do that in spirit. But formally, it's not.
I guess your tensor product could be non-commutative. Is that what you're saying? And then you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, some categories won't have the symmetry.
This is what the symmetric, symmetric monoidal category means.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and so part of the formalism is to use this graphical notation to essentially extend Dirac notation in the sense of we can now represent Peierls and Ketts by these triangles, and Bra is just represented as the flipped image of the Ketts, and this is defined by considering a dagger functor, which is just the operation that does this. And the reason for defining these structures is that the category of finite dimensional Hilbert spaces is an example of one of these categories. But the point is that there are lots of other examples. For example, the category of sets and relations. And the aim is to try to provide settings in which you can calculate phenomena that are like quantum phenomena but in a simpler way, and also to accommodate different types of toy models which may exhibit the same kind of structural features as quantum theory. So I'm running out of time, so I'm going to try and cut to the chase. And one of the key features of the whole formalism is to represent post-selected quantum teleportation. And it turns out that this arises in category theory in a very canonical way, meaning that this equation here, which you can think of as post-selected quantum teleportation, because on the right-hand side, I'm preparing a Bell state, this red triangle at the bottom, and I'm sending one half of the Bell state to Alice's side. Bob is keeping one half. And the effect there is the post-selected effect, which leads to the identity channel. So to think of it accurately, it's not a quantum measurement, it's post-selecting on one of the four outcomes. And this equation, which, because it's defined category theoretically, arises in many settings, exactly captures the fact that there's an identity channel between Alice and Bob. And again, the topology of the diagrams subsumes the calculations that you might do to demonstrate this in the category of finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, because I can represent this Bell state just by a connected line, and then when I yank the line, it is the identity channel between the two parties. So I'm just going to skip to some more interesting parts. So just to say that these graphical methods arise many recent formalisms, like reconstructions of quantum theory. So for example, Lucien uses them in his approach, and also the work by Giulio Chiarvella, Mario Dariano, and Paolo Perinotti, they use graphical means, and it's part of ongoing work to work out exactly how their semi-formal use of graphical methods corresponds to this more formal setting of categorical quantum mechanics. But given that it does seem to mean something about quantum theory, the question is, what do these diagrams mean causally? So the problem is that this equation of post-selected teleportation basically contradicts what we might think of as the background causal structure, because it allows an identity channel between Alice and Bob, even though Alice does not have to send any classical data to Bob. And that's very confusing, because it's not clear what how we can make this more realistic. So what I'm just going to say is that what we need to do is to replace that equation, the compactness equation, with something that enforces no information flow between Alice and Bob when they're not causally connected. And that will tie in with the fact that the monoidal product is also represented by this graphical disconnectedness.
Was there signaling in that? I don't know about this post-selected teleportation, but if you post-select, then can you signal?
Yes.
You can signal.
Yes. So it's consistent with that fact, but we want to improve the formalism now to make sure that, well, essentially the post-selection is not allowed. I've spent a lot more of the time symmetry thing than I thought I would, but let me just say that what this corresponds to essentially is defining some subcategory of this setting of categorical quantum mechanics. So in other words, the kind of slogan is that this original category, let's say a finite dimensional Hilbert spaces and linear maps, represents kind of all processes that can happen between systems, causally or not. And so what we want to do is, when this situation arises of post-selected quantum teleportation leading to signaling, we want to exclude such morphisms. And there's a canonical way of doing that and defining a category which would exclude signaling between Alice and Bob. And let me just, I'll just say the main point. The canonical way is by defining a causal category. And what this will ensure is that when Alice and Bob, or when Bob is outside Alice's future light cone, we must make sure that the morphisms between Alice and Bob are disconnected in this way. And therefore, when we are applying our calculations, it will not be the case that Alice can signal to Bob. And to make this consistent with the formalism of categorical quantum mechanics, it turns out that this leads to particular properties on the unit object of your monoidal category. So the unit object is this object of scalars, and what it represents is probability, amplitude, and formalism. And what we are led to define is a structure in which the unit object is terminal, meaning that for every other object in the category, there is only one morphism to it. And in particular, for the unit object itself, there is only one morphism to itself, and that is the identity morphism. So what it means is excluding post-selection, because we're excluding the possibility of effects such as the Bell effect in teleportation, and instead we're just left with the trace operation. So let me just describe how that works.
Can you say what that equation meant?
Which one?
Well, you had it. I thought it was like a new axiom or a weakening of the definition.
Yeah.
So the tensor product is only partially defined.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Now, so, and what's the condition for it to be defined? What does that mean?
This, the top one?
Yeah. If and only if. Should we just read that as A and B are space like, or what should we
Yeah, exactly, that? Yeah. So that's the other thing. So I start off with this monoidal category in which any pairs of objects, any two objects can be tensored together. And also I have this full set of morphisms between any two objects, which seems to allow information flow even when I want to interpret them as causally unrelated. And so in order for consistency with the formalism of categorical quantum mechanics, it turns out that in order to assign causal structure to the object involved, we have to restrict the tensor. So now it will only represent systems which are space-like separated. So the tensor will now represent, tensoring together objects will actually represent something analogous to a space-like hypersurface. But of course, I'm just considering a very discrete, simple setting.
Does the category then, do the objects carry a partial order in this category? Or
Yes, they will.
So if you can imagine, we start with your previous one, put a partial order on the objects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then restrict the formation of tensor products to space-like separated objects.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. I was in the previous slides, I was describing exactly how that goes, but it's running out of time, so I didn't describe it. But that's also fits in with the fact that I was saying that the way to define such a causal structure is to throw away objects which we don't need and consider a subcategory or original category, because I'm throwing away those objects which represent the tensor product of time-like related systems. So let me just skip straight to something which may be interesting and ties together what I was talking about at the beginning. So I was talking about this process, which is backward signaling. And I said that it's a local classical process, meaning that in the forward direction, I can think of some invariable lambda, which gets sent to this node, and it is copied to the two locations. And this tells the local systems which local deterministic process to apply. But then, with this view of categorical quantum mechanics and the Coulter category I defined, I can imagine this backward direction. Now, I can time reverse this process. And on the right-hand side, this is what it would look like. And what it would look like, actually, is that post-selection is happening, because the outputs would feed back into these local deterministic processes. But the only processes there which would be allowed are where the lambdas come together and are the same at this triangle point. So I think this reveals, in a sense, how post-selection is a crucial consideration when thinking about causal structure of probabilistic processes. And that's part of the reason for defining causal categories, because we want to exclude post-selection. And so if this is represented in the causal category on the left, the forward direction, then time reversing it will allow post-selection. And that will not, therefore, be a causal category. So that is the kind of structure which I think addresses the example of backward signaling that I talked about at the beginning. So let me just finish up by saying that because causal categories are a discrete setting for describing a range of processes, I think there are good applications to be found for it in, for example, retrocausal models, because Hugh Price has an interesting model of retrocausality, which involves something very similar to a category of sets and relations, and that fits in exactly with the setting here. And as I mentioned, many of the structures here have close links to reconstructions of quantum theory. In particular, the compactness equation of teleportation is used quite heavily in especially the reconstruction by Kirubella and Dariano and Perinotti. And so I think that will be the direction in which to take this, and that's part of ongoing work. And these are some papers if you want to see.
Questions? Is there a danger that you should throw the baby out with the bathwater when you disallow certain sorts of
operations?
Like you still want to be able to reproduce the physics
yeah.
that corresponds to post-selective teleportation.
So that means so in order to achieve that, you need to consider this subcategory or this causal subcategory as tracking what you define in this category which contains it. So in other words, the use of it comes when doing your final calculation. So I can define my measurements in the category which contains it and even talk about amplitudes there. But in order to calculate whether information flow between systems is possible, I need to then restrict to the subcategory.
I know you sort of rushed by a lot of stuff or didn't show us, but I'm trying to understand where the time asymmetry went in. So you showed us that one axiom that forbids you from forming tensor product when things are not space-like, but that's still time reversible.
So the time asymmetry.
So is the asymmetry that other one about this terminal something or other? Is that
Yeah, it comes from terminality. The time asymmetry comes from the fact that. Well, I'll show you the diagram of post-selective quantum. Yeah, this one. So it comes from the fact that in a causal category, there is only one effect, which is the trace operation. But I can still prepare arbitrary states. So if I time reverse it, if I flip it around, then that means I'll just have one state, which is the totally mixed state. But I'll have
does the thing on the top stands for just one unique morphism?
Yeah, one.
But if you turn it upside down, you can have many objects that participate in.
Turning it upside down will correspond to looking at.
Well, but if you just turn the thing upside down, just what's on top of it, you call that what, a terminal object? And then if you turn it upside down, you call it an initial object, or what do you call it if you turn it upside down?
Yeah, then it'll be initial, right?
So is the asymmetry that you allow many initial objects, but only one terminal object? Would that be a fair way of saying it?
Well, I have many initial morphism states, and one unique morphism to the terminal object. I mean, that's essentially the point. It's just the terminology is not.
Okay.
It's not like that.
You have one initial object, but many different kinds of arrows can come out of it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But your final object, only one kind of arrow. Does the unique arrow.
Well, the unique arrow.
Going into it from each other object
Something
like.
So I have arbitrary state preparation, but one way of tracing, one way of getting an answer to that.
I'll ask a question. Can you clarify exactly what kinds of correlations have the property that when you look at the time-reversed version of the correlation, they appear signaling, but the forward and time correlations appear to be non-signaling? So you said PR boxes.
So the examples we have are PR boxes and these classical stochastic matrices. That's all we have in the moment.
So given that it works for classical stochastic matrix, you wouldn't say this is some sort of strange quantum effect?
No. In fact, the quantum ones are the ones which exactly seem to not exclude this. I mean, the genuinely quantum non-mechanical.
So I have a question. It's not particularly clear, but I'll try to ask it anyhow. I'm a bit concerned that maybe the only conclusion we should draw is that there's a certain kind of asymmetry of inference, right? So when we have no signaling, it says that, you know, given knowledge of the input on the left, I can't make inferences about the output on the right, right? So forget about causal talk. Just think of, you know, what sorts of inferences can I make? Learning the setting on the left teaches me nothing about the outcome on the right. But for those same correlations, it might still be the case that learning the outcome on the right does teach me something about the outcome on the left. And so your stochastic matrix, I could try to interpret just in that way. There's an asymmetry in the kinds of inferences I can make between these sorts of things. But I don't see how to go from that to a statement about asymmetry in causal relations. So I guess...
Well, I mean, it depends on assuming that the background causal structure is time symmetric in that way. Let me go to this diagram. This one. As long as I am assuming that whether these two points where these inferences are being made are space-like separated, and they continue to be when I reverse my direction of inference, then that seems to still pose a problem.
But I guess it's the difference between reversing your direction of inference and reversing your direction of causal influence. So if I were to say, you know, what does it mean to reverse my direction of influence, then I'm sort of saying, you know, the things that in one scenario are the givens, say A is the given, B is the conclusion, the thing I'm trying to make inferences about, swap places. So now B is the given and A is the thing I'm trying to make inferences about. And given that you're using Bayes' theorem as your probabilistic, your way of doing inversions, it looks as if you're describing an inversion, an inference. But an inversion in terms of causal influence seems to be something else, that you're now saying that changes in A, you know, cause changes in B as opposed
to the opposite situation where it changes in B and D.
I think this goes back to the point I was saying that there's this kind of subtlety here, because when I look at the statistics, we're going to just infer that signaling occurred in the reverse direction by looking at the Bayesian inversion. So I guess the question is then, is that inference that we're making by looking at this conditional probability conflicting with this background causal order? So I don't really see how, just because we now interpret probabilities as inference, or the conditional probabilities as inference, that changes the interpretation. Because in the forward direction, you still want to claim that even if Bob is just making an inference about Alice's inputs, it still has to be uncorrelated when they're space like separate. You would still agree that condition needs to hold, I would take it. So then in the backward direction, it holds equally.
If you imagine that the free will is really an illusion, and we just sort of imagine we choose things that in fact are just randomly chosen to be such, then and then you imagine some creatures who are sort of moving backwards in time. So for them, they're having that sort of delusion of free will in the backwards direction. Then I think your example is a problem, because for the sort of deluded creatures, i.e. us moving forwards in time, we have no signaling. But for the deluded creatures moving backwards in time, who imagine that the outcome is actually a choice they made, they do have signaling. So I think that's the nature of the problem. So, in some sense.
I don't think I really understood you.
I think you were just restating when you said it, though.
Sorry?
You were just trying to restate his main point, his first point.
The example that because he's conditioning on the outcomes,
right,
and then looking at the probability distribution of the inputs.
Yeah.
And then you get a violation of this
condition.
There's no signaling, which,
yeah,
like the sort of formal inverse of those. And yeah, it seems that the problem is sort of in that context where you, because yeah, I think you want to imagine that you can, even in the case where you don't really have free will, you sort of, there are certain things that you imagine you choose, and then you want to be sure that the effect of choosing that doesn't propagate faster than time. I guess I'm just trying to make sense of where
free will comes into it.
Where the problem is here with your example, what the problem is causing.
I mean, I agree that somehow the role of free will is not clear, but again, I mean, the way I'm thinking of it just is as some kind of game where we have to guess from the statistics which is the correct direction. And as I was saying, the time reverse operation is not an operational one. All the time reversal symmetry.
It's not an active transformation.
Yeah. So we just have to infer from statistics what it would look like.
Why is it a problem? I mean, is it a problem for what? Is that the question?
I guess you think the fundamental laws of physics, like time, satisfy some sort of time reversal symmetries, so that when you watch a film, there shouldn't be any fundamental difference between the two directions.
There is.
Well, I mean, it turns out there is.
But is it of the same? Is this?
Yeah, this is a different sort of.
Is this a problem of the same ilk?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because this is a very simple kind of situation.
Why does the second law?
I mean, this doesn't seem to have anything to do with the second law. It's a different kind of issue. It's much more basic in some sense, because it has just to do with signaling and causality.
It's a problem if you think that this notion of time reversal of the partial order of the time orientation of a manifold still does not change whether points are space-like separated. And if you combine that with the hypothesis that the no-signaling condition is the probabilistic condition you need to impose when background causal structure is like that. That's the contradiction.
Can I just go back to Rob's question just for one clarification? You said you don't get this problem in quantum mechanics.
Well,
so what does that mean? Does that mean you take, for example, any settings of directions of Tuchstern-Gerlachs and there's always some choice of prior with the settings that will reproduce, that'll look like it doesn't?
I mean,
direction of time, or what exactly?
A quantum.
Can you state an exact theorem?
If you use a bipartite quantum state to generate this kind of correlation matrix such that it will be non-local, then it will not be signaling under time reversal for all priors.
But there always exists some prior which makes it non-signaling in the reverse,
There are.
Is that the
state? For certain states and measurement choices, yeah, there will be some prior.
Wait, your claim is for every choice of state, and I guess you have to give a range of choices for the settings or something. Do you give only two choices for each setting, or do you give an arbitrary number of choices for each setting?
I'm just saying that the quantum correlation matrices, i.e. genuinely non-local ones, which are from measurements on bipartite stable state, will not have the property that they are signaling under time reversal for all priors. So they will be signaling for some prior.
So the statement, there always exists some prior.
Yeah.
Which makes it signaling or makes it not?
Makes it signaling under time reversal. Yeah.
That's saying that there is a, that's analogous to what you told us before. That's saying that you have, that's going in the direction of saying there is a time irreversibility. I thought your claim was that you didn't see the time reversibility for the quantum correlation.
No, the claim was that it can't be stated unambiguously as it can be for this classical correlation matrix. Because as we were saying at the beginning, why should we consider the priors? Well, in this example, it doesn't matter what prior we choose. It is always signaling under time reversal. So in the quantum case, it does matter
which prior. So the same is in the quantum case, there will always be some prior that makes it non-signal.
Well, either non-signal.
But maybe it's also true that there'll always be someone that makes it signal.
Yeah.
But there'll always be some prior that makes it non-signal. So you can't, without knowing the prior, you can't just look at this and know.
Yeah. Right.
The direction of time. But if you go in the forward time, will it be true that no matter what prior you assume, you'll get?
It will be
non-signaling,
Yes.
So that's still an asymmetry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an asymmetry, but it's just not as strong a one as this example, because this is independent of the problem.
Marcus has a question. Marcus, did you have a question?
No.
Other Marcus, sorry. I thought you were signaling earlier that you had a question.
Yeah, so I was just wondering about the time arrow that you pointed out at the beginning. So I was trying to understand a bit more operationally how you could actually discover that error if you look at, as you suggested, say, a movie of what happened, get the statistics of some outcomes, right? So if you take this classical box that has this property that if you reverse it, it signals, then you, I don't know, make a movie of physicists feeding in data and so on. So if you got this movie then from the statistics of outcomes, you're saying that you could basically discover what is past and what is future, right? Now, wouldn't you then say in this case that the past is just the part, say, of the movie which has less correlations, so we have like product distribution, and like the future would be the one with stronger correlations? So could we say that the arrow that you have is something from less correlations pointing to the direction of stronger correlations? Is that true?
Mm. Well, that kind of makes it sound a bit like a statistical mechanical thing.
Yeah, that would more go into the second law direction.
But I don't
I mean, qualitatively, perhaps, but I'm not sure how. I mean, as I was arguing, it's not related to any kind of statistical mechanical error.
Mm-hmm. So maybe one should look at the other counterexamples that we have, that it doesn't fit to the second law.
Mm.
No.
Would it be possible to actually construct a physical example of this? I mean, something you could actually make?
Yeah, I mean, these are just, the example I have is just a classical.
But I mean, I'm just. It's one thing describing it in the abstract.
I can't construct a physical example of the time reversal.
No, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, something where the statistics are, in fact, have this property.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't we know that in some sense this has to be tied to the second law or whatever it's sitting? I mean, if you really physically, if we do accept the CBT theorem for the moment, then if you really reverse everything, literally everything, then whatever runs backward ought to be also a valid, valid movie. So the only way, there's some
clarity
here because we don't know how to talk about quantum world intrinsically. You're all, so that makes all such claims a little bit obscure. But suppose we did know how to talk about it. Then you reverse the whole story with all these people with their instruments and their settings and all the outcomes and inputs. And you run it backwards, then it has to be also valid. The only thing that could prevent it from being valid would be some assumption about the delta, the initial state or the final state or something.
I think the difference is that in this setting we're still assuming that there is a notion of intervention on the part of the experimenters. That's kind of what justifies this Mersenne condition.
But then doesn't that intervention itself have a time direction attached to it? But maybe that's the subtlety you were talking about. But it seems that you've just built in something that has a time direction.
Well, I mean, it's not means built in. I mean, this is the way many people study correlations as a general framework.
But then how can you ask if you have a time reversal invariance when part of your essential input is that there's element in
that, the picture? I mean, that's more debatable. I mean, that seems to be a philosophical issue. That seems to be a more subtle philosophical issue about whether the role of intervention here is exactly what's causing this.
I don't know what you mean by intervention. It seems that you want to include the experimenters in your whole system, and your system is closed because you need this prior. When I know it's independent of which prior, but you need a prior. Right. So you're including the agents as part of the system. You know, they have a probability distribution on them. So they're not external, they're in there with their probability. Right, isn't that, I mean, I thought that's kind of the whole idea. You need the prior, you need to include them.
Well, I need the prior to talk about the Bayesian inversion. But just by saying there's prior, I don't think that means that it's included in the system. I mean, there just is a prior distribution on the inputs.
But there doesn't seem to be any distinction between the inputs and the outputs. I mean, they're as, the inputs are as physical as the outputs, if you like. Mm-hmm. Right? You're not treating them differently.
Well, I mean,
That seems to be your part of what you mean.
That's part of what I'm saying. But yeah. I mean, the fact that at least this backward signaling, I think, potentially part of the resolution of that, I think it's probably what Lucien was hinting at, is that there's some kind of assumption here when we talk about the no signaling condition that there is, you know, free will on the part of the experimenters. Maybe that's the only regime in which we can really use it.
There are sort of classical boxes that are approximately time reversible. I mean, anything that doesn't involve dissipation can be approximately run backwards. So presumably, if you had a classical box like this, and the time-reversed box would exhibit signaling, presumably that couldn't really be run backwards, not even approximately, which presumably means it would have to be involving the second law somehow. I was just thinking that maybe this really is involving the second law in a way that isn't totally obvious when you look at the abstract description.
I don't see, I mean, perhaps, but I don't see how. It's just too, because I mean, the way to think about independence from the second law is surely to think about whether this process can happen in an entropy decreasing world rather than an entropy increasing world.
I guess what I'm really thinking is that if you really want to see the connection with the second law, if there is one, I think maybe you need to be a bit more concrete about it. Rather than just looking at the correlation matrix, you need to look at the physics that would lie behind an actual example of such a correlation matrix in more detail.
So, I'm going to try one more go at my concern from earlier. If I'm told of two variables that are space-like separated, merely that they're correlated, so this is a fact about the observed statistics. So for example, whenever this one's zero, this one's zero, whenever this one's one, something got observed. I can't immediately conclude that this one is causally influencing that one, because it could be that there's a common cause that explains the correlation.
Right.
So in the scenarios where we say there's no signaling, it's because we've gone and influenced this one, and then looked at this one and seen if the statistics here depend on what we chose to make this. So there's sort of the difference between the conditional probability of observing B given that you've observed A and the conditional probability for observing a particular value of B given that you've made A to take a particular value. So when you just see some observed correlations, you can't conclude that there's a causal connection. But in your development, when you look at this sort of backward in time scenario and you say, we see that the conditional probability of a particular input variable over here given a particular output variable over there relative to the usual time direction is not an independence, you then say, therefore there's a causal fact. But couldn't you just say, no, it's a common cause? So how do you rule out the common cause explanation of that correlation in the backward in time direction?
Well, when you say what I was saying was not that there is a causal connection, but it looks like there is. Right? I mean, because as I was saying, you can't, it depends what happened.
Wouldn't it be better to say it looks as if either there's a causal connection or there's a common cause explanation?
But I mean, I can just construct this box in a really kind of simple universe in which the universe just ends at the outputs of these boxes. Then there can't be a common cause. Because there's nothing before it and I reverse it.
Okay. Well, that seems like a very special case.
Yeah, well, indeed, it's designed to counter.
You can place the talk.
It's I think a good place to place the talk. I hereby define this the point that the talk ends by fiat. So that's
the address.
Right.